Okay, well, greetings. Thanks a lot for coming today. I'm assuming that you all, actually, is there anybody that is not familiar with Protect LDS Children? Okay, let me get this closer up. Okay, yes. I wondered if I needed to leave a part out, but I won't. Well, so that you've got that synopsis. Nationwide. Can you hear it now? Okay, so nationwide, one out of four girls are sexually molested before they hit 18 years old. One out of four girls. One out of six boys are sexually molested before they're 18. It's a gigantic number of people, number of children. It is a huge problem. That is an epidemic when you're talking about that, those kind of numbers. Here in Utah, the numbers are even worse. Utah leads the nation in child sex abuse. One in three girls, one in four boys. Now, I've got six girls. I hope none of them have been sexually abused. They've never told us about it if they have. Sometimes kids don't like talking about that until they're ready, and that's often in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and so on. But the statistics are that if I lived in Utah, two of my girls would have been sexually abused. It is a horrendous thing in our society. Is there any woman in here that has the privilege of voting in general elections? Any? Yes, if we'd asked that question 100 years ago, it would be nobody had that, or maybe a little bit more than 100 years ago. 150 years ago, no, you wouldn't have had that. Over 100,000 women gathered at the first women's suffrage movement. 100,000 marched in the streets of Washington, D.C. Civil rights. Now, that happened when I was a kid, when Martin Luther King and others were leading the civil rights movement. Hundreds of thousands of people marched in the streets across the country to raise the issue to the fore and agitate for civil rights. LGBT rights. In 1978, the very first march with regards to LGBT issues was held. Over 100,000 people showed up for that. 100,000 people. Now, I don't know the total statistics. I don't have an exact number, but I've heard it estimated that 10% of the population, about 10%, fall in this LGBT category. 10%. Compare that with our children that are abused. Here in Utah, 33%? 33%? Across the country, 25% fit in that category. Equal rights for women in 1978, 100,000 showed up for the first march with regards to equal rights for women. 2019, this year, Pride drew over 150,000 in New York City. So the women have marched for their rights. Gay people have marched for their rights. Black people march for their rights. When are the children, what the heck are the children doing? When are they going to march for their rights? When are they going to march to stop the epidemic that plagues them? When are the children going to march in order to end the horrific trauma that continues to happen to them, that causes so many problems for decades for them? When are they going to march? Well, of course they're not. They're children. They can't stand up for themselves. They don't know how to stand up for themselves. In fact, they don't even understand what is happening to them. They won't understand it, what has happened to them, until it's already had such horrendous effects. No, the children are not going to march for them. We are going to march for them. The adults that recognize this horrendous plague, epidemic that is in our country, that we have swept under the rug for ages. It's got to be us, the adults, that stand up and march for the 33% of the girls that will be sexually abused without us standing up to end the epidemic. So the very first march, and by the way, in case you didn't know this, the major reason that I wanted to give this talk today was to promote the march that's going to come up, is coming up. Now, I'm going to talk about some other things. I'm going to give you a synopsis of the whole thing. But the very first march in the history of this country for our children is going to be held October 5th, 2019. In 1978, they had the first march for LGBT rights. It was sometime in the early 1900s. They had that first march for women's suffrage. Hundreds of thousands of people showed up. We should have hundreds, 100,000 people. I know there are hundreds of thousands of people across this country that look and say, sexual abuse, I'm against that. We need to stand up and eliminate that. But somehow we've got to get the message out for October the 5th and gather. My goal is 5,000 people. And I can't tell you how many people have said, Sam, that's way too many. Okay, you're going to look bad when you have a smaller number. I don't care if I look bad or not. I'm concerned about those kids. I'm concerned about the sexual abuse that affects so many, this huge number in our population. And when it hits, it doesn't just, it's not like the mumps, where you have the mumps for a week and then you might remember it kind of 20 years later. Sexual abuse, that lasts forever with these children, and I'll talk about some of the results are from it. So anyway, October the 5th, 2019, I invite you to come, bring your families, bring your friends, tell your coworkers about it, tell your neighbors about it. We want to descend in Salt Lake City so the whole country, so the whole world, at least the country, knows that we're no longer going to allow sexual abuse to be swept under the rug and live with the horrid consequences. By the way, you probably ought to, there's no clock in here, so can you let me know maybe when it's 4? It's 3:45, so to 4:45. I want to leave some time for questions. So, yeah, so tell me when maybe we've got 20 minutes left. Okay, introduction, my history in the Mormon Church. I was baptized when I was 8 years old, hit all the benchmarks that most boys do in the Mormon Church, served a mission to Guatemala and El Salvador, went to BYU, got married in the temple. This is my wife right here. Had six kids, six daughters, raised all of them in the church, served in all the callings that traditional callings that you serve in, including I served as a bishop for a little over 5 years. My wife was not disciplined. She still holds the current temple recommend, and she testified at my excommunication trial. Okay, activism. So how did I get started in what I'm doing right now? A little over 2 years ago, I was going through a faith transition, and I was open about it, and so it caused a lot of problems, but because I was openly asking questions. And a couple years into that, which would have been a little over 2 years ago, a fellow that I'd home taught for 10 years, who had never been to church, but I'd visited him regularly, and I was a good friend with he and his kids and his wife, and he gave me a call and said, Sam, I think the time's come for me to share with you why I don't go to church. And so we got together, and he recounted that he had, he and his wife had decided to come back to church, had been inactive for a while, because they wanted to raise their kids in the youth program. So they were, they had two boys, and one boy that was either 13 or 14 came to him one day and said, Dad, the bishop wants to talk to me. He was not familiar with the regular youth interviews because they'd not been active. And his dad said, don't worry about it. It's not a problem. I'll just come and sit on the couch out in the hall. Son goes in the interview. A few minutes later, rushes out, and he said to his dad, "Dad, the bishop just asked me, do I have sex with other boys, and do I masturbate?" This man was shocked. He stood up, walked into the bishop's office, leaned over the bishop's desk, and said this, "If you ever ask one of my sons a question like that again, I will beat you to a pulp." That really struck me hard. Now, I didn't know what had happened to my own children. Nothing registered in my mind yet, okay, except to, oh, wow, that's amazing. I sure would not have wanted to be that bishop, because this was a former police officer, former Vietnam vet. The whole time he was there, he was working behind enemy lines. He's just kind of an intimidating guy. So that's what I was thinking, not about my own kids, because they're grown at that point. But it struck me. And so I put out on social media, "Did this happen to anybody else? Anybody else? How naive was I? Anybody else ask if they masturbate in the bishop's office?" And suddenly I was flooded with all kinds of stories. They got worse and worse and worse as far as not just being asked that question, but then asking further details about it. Okay, so we're all adults here, right? If the children have to hear it, we ought to be able to hear what our children are hearing. So some kids were asked, "Do you masturbate? Under or over your panties? How many fingers do you use?" That's explicit as I'm going to get. But the questions get a lot more explicit with many bishops. Horrendously explicit. Pornographically explicit. So after a couple of months of these stories coming in, we had a daughter that was living with us. She was 10 years out of the young women's program, so she was maybe 26 or 27. And so I asked her, "Honey," and prior to this, I don't think I had ever said the word masturbate in my household. I certainly never talked to any of my kids about it. I would change that if I was raising kids again. But anyway, so I asked her, "Honey, did the bishop ever ask you this question?" And she said, "Yes, Dad. When I was 12, the bishop asked me. I didn't know what it was, so I asked my friends. They didn't know what it was, so then I Googled it." Now guess what you get when you Google masturbation? She said, "Dad, I found out what it was, how to do it, and I found pornography." So the bishop, by asking these intrusive, totally inappropriate questions, had introduced her to things that I wasn't ready to have her introduced by my bishop, by the church, to pornography or masturbation or whatever. So at that point, I started to write a blog about it. As these stories were coming in, I was writing about them. Can you believe this person was asked this or this? And then it was, wow, this person was asked these questions and then shamed, felt so much shame, they started to hate themselves. Then this person felt so much shame, they started to hate themselves and make really bad decisions in life. This person started thinking about suicide. In fact, over half the stories that have been shared with me, suicide ideation is one of the things that was a consequence. So can you imagine this? We're sending our children into an office all alone with a bishop who can ask them any sexual question that can result in that child feeling so much shame, they start thinking about suicide, start attempting suicide, and some actually completing suicide. It's just a horrendous thing. So anyway, I started writing about it. That really didn't do anything as far as a lot of sympathy, a lot of, oh my gosh, I can't believe that's happening. But as far as reaching out to my church leaders, so I reached out to my bishop, I talked to him about it, I talked to my stake president about it, and basically what I was told was, don't worry about it, this is not a problem. Well, then I started a petition. This is October of 2017. So the petition took us 2 months to reach 10,000 in signatures, which was the goal. We eventually got to about 22 or 3,000 signatures. I guess I probably ought to look at my notes to make sure that I don't miss the important stuff. So we started gathering the stories. Then we decided to do a march. What do you do with the stories? We decided to do a march. So we marched in Salt Lake City on October 30th of 2018 and printed up the stories, one book of stories, horrendous stories of what we'd done to our children. And we marched those. 1,000 people gathered together, and we marched those stories up to the church office building, which it was just, I asked my wife afterwards, what did you think about the march? And her words were, do you remember? It was magical. So the first time she did anything to support me, there wasn't much to do before that. But she said it was magical. And I thought, yeah, it was really a magical thing. Here we've got 1,000 people together, normal, regular people, good people, parents, children, and well-behaved, and then you heard stories there. You heard people break down and start crying and about, you know, what had happened to them, and so happy to see 1,000 people standing up to validate that what had happened to them was wrong. There's something healing about that, seeing other people stand up and in support of them. So a lot of healing went on. It was kind of interesting when we delivered the books in Salt Lake. We were hoping, I'd been in touch with the public affairs, and I was hoping that we would have an apostle or at least some general authority greet us. Instead, we were greeted by a representative from the public affairs department, which has no real authority. And the only thing they said to me was this. So I'm presenting these books that are so profoundly touching the damage that had happened. In each book, I had a victim or a survivor present one of those books. Is there anybody here that presented a book? I've seen at least one person here that presented a book, but so a survivor whose story was in the book presented. And as we're presenting, they said, Brother Young, could you please, I had a megaphone, could you please tell your people not to touch the building? And I was kind of taking aback. What? And they said, tell your people not to touch the building. That was the only response we got. Apparently somebody was leaning against the church office building, and they did not like that we were touching the church office building. So anyway, we did the march. The church did make a change. They made a change 4 days before our march, and they said this, that the change was made that if a child desires, when an interview happens, if a child desires, and another a parent or another adult can be in the room if the child desires. Okay, so when I read that, I was out of town when I read that, I looked at it that I was angry. I'm looking at, I'm a parent. This child I am raising, I am going to make the decisions on where that child needs protection. The child has no idea the damages that can come from things they're not protected from. But that, at least they made that little change, which kind of sent a message that it's okay to have another person in the room. But the way it was phrased, it is up to the child. Okay. Then I did a hunger strike because we still needed to have major changes. So about a year ago, I was here doing a 23-day hunger strike. That was quite an experience. And then when I went home, I was kind of thinking, I have done so much this year, I need to just take a break from it for a while. And I don't know what to do after this anyway. A week later, I got the excommunicate, the letter calling me to disciplinary court. And when I got that was a little prod to, okay, Sam, here's an opportunity to raise the message even higher. It kind of given you a megaphone, which then I used that. I blogged about that and put it on all the social media places, published my letter, and then we had the excommunication trial. It takes about a week. No, 3 days after that, a letter was delivered. I decided not to open it there. I wanted to, again, use this to raise awareness. So I came to Salt Lake City. About 200 people were at the press conference I called, and all the media, where I opened the letter in front of. in front of the world and read that I was being excommunicated. Okay, after that, I tell you, that made me mad. I was kind of ready to quit, but then they kicked me out of the church that I decided to stay in, that I was trying to improve, and that my kids and grandkids were still in, and they're kicking me out for standing up to protect children. So I thought about it for a couple of months and decided on the actions for this year, which the major action is coming up in 2 months, October 5th, a march to highlight we will not stand for what is going on right now with our children. We are going to march to eliminate child sex abuse. So there's a couple of things we've done to go after that. One was to structure something that people could kind of get around or wrap their heads around or get involved, and that was climb a mountain, save a child. So climb a mountain, post a banner, unfurl a banner, high on a mountaintop, that states protect every child. Hundreds of people have done that. We posted a bunch of pictures on mountaintops at this point in time. We got a picture of Stu. Anybody else here climbed a mountain and posted a banner? Oh, yes. Okay. The Greenwood's great. It's kind of fun with Stu on Ensign Peak. Do you mind me mentioning this, Stu? We published it, so, I mean, it's on the website. Anyway, so Stu, we went up to the Ensign Peak, and we're broadcasting the message, unfurling the banner, protect every child, now. And right there at the plaque of his great-great-great-grandfather? Great-great-grandfather. Okay, two greats, who went up to Ensign Peak with Brigham Young to survey the valley, okay? And I don't know if they raised a banner or not. They raised a banner? Okay, so great-great-grandfather raised a banner with Brigham Young. We're now raising his... George A. Smith's great-grandson is now raising, great-great-grandson is now raising a banner to protect every child. Okay, so we're now bringing those banners to the streets of Salt Lake City. If you didn't climb a mountain, that's okay. Bring any banner, or just bring yourself. It's people that we need. If we have 5,000 people, media will pay big attention to this. Okay, child sex abuse. What time is it? 4:10. So we got how much longer? 10 minutes. Before we do questions. Okay, so child sex abuse. We don't like to talk about it. Nobody likes to talk about that. We tend to brush it under the rug. But that just perpetuates the cycle of abuse. You don't talk about it, it's going to keep going on regardless of whether we knew about it and just didn't say anything. We've got to bring it to the fore because it causes all kinds of problems in society. So do you think violent crime is a problem? Is that a problem? Do we like violent crime or is that a problem? Well, it's a problem, of course. Did you know that sexual abuse of children is a root cause of violent crime? Lots of stuff happens because children are abused. Let me give you some items here that are root cause, where sexual abuse is root cause. Violent crime, homelessness. So when I'm here for something like this, my wife wasn't here until today, well, then I associate with the homeless that are hanging around Temple Square. And two of them, when they saw my sign and my cape, and they asked me about it, and I explained, says, you know what, I was sexually abused when I was 5 years old, and then this happened, and then this happened, and I was really messed up my whole life because of that. So I heard that more than once from folks on the street, but it's a root cause of homelessness, teen pregnancy, health problems. It facilitates or breaks down barriers in our body that additional health problems happen. Substance abuse, incarceration. Now, maybe last November when I was starting to think of what we're going to do this year, I met with somebody that does a prison ministry, And this guy said, you know what? My estimate would be that 95% of the prisoners that I've worked with experienced childhood trauma that lived with them through, that brought them into the aerial area of criminality. So incarceration, it's huge. Before I came up here, I spoke to a woman that works with women in prison, and she says it's at least 90% that were sexually abused when they were kids. It causes lasting problems. Child abuse is the most... What do you think? Oh, I've already given it away, haven't I? So you think about childhood health problems. What would you say the most prevalent childhood problem is? You might think depression. Okay, depression. Here are some that we hear about. We hear about cancer. Obesity, you hear about obesity. More common than obesity, ADHD, or childhood cancer is child sexual abuse. That is the most serious, the most common childhood health problem that we've got. Yet nobody's talking about it. We're not talking about it on top of the table. Our wonderful LGBT brothers and sisters, and I support this 100%, are marching for their rights. Somebody needs to march for the rights of our children who we are causing these health problems for them because we're not preventing them. And health consequences include post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety and depression, George, substance abuse, delinquency, suicidal thoughts, and suicide. So there's a big problem with youth suicide here in Utah. Actually, all across the country, but Utah, I think the youth suicide has escalated faster than anywhere else in the country. A lot of our concern has been that is the LGBT children. Well, it's not just that. It's also those that have been sexually abused. Suicidal ideation, suicide attempts, and actual suicide is a common problem for children that have been sexually abused. Every hour, so we're going to pass an hour. Every hour, 77 new cases of child abuse are reported. Credible reports of child abuse. 77. So 77 children abused. And by the way, the vast majority of abuse never gets reported. But let's just consider that 77 children are sexually assaulted while we are talking here. It's a horrendous problem in our society. So I don't know what Utah, I don't think, can have a deficit, right? A fiscal deficit where you spend more money than you take in. Are their budget balanced? It is. Okay. Well, the U.S. budget is not balanced. Okay. What we are allowing to happen to our children not only messes them up, but it costs us, the taxpayers, a whole bunch of money. Here in the state of Utah, the state reports they spend $5 billion a year. $5 billion a year in the state of Utah to address when sexual abuse happens, as far as the addressing what happened to the child and the all the consequences of sex abuse there, and also the perpetrator, incarceration, and so on. $5 billion a year are spent as a result of child sex abuse. Nationwide, the estimate is $124 billion. $124 billion. And that's the cases that are reported, let alone that are not reported. $124 billion. Over the course of 10 years, you're talking about $1.2 trillion. And who pays for that? Well, it's whoever pays taxes. So that's you and me are paying for the consequences financially of the sex abuse. Now, our cause is to eliminate sex abuse. And our target is mostly institutions. institutions that we read about almost every week in the paper, some additional pastor, some new bishop, some new minister, somebody else in the congregation where it was covered up and the guy continued to assault, to sexually abuse children. So these institutions, churches, like the Mormon Church, like the Catholic Church, like the Baptist Church, I can name every single church where you have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of victims. Now, a church is a little different from you and I. They pay zero taxes. They're tax exempt. They're causing all this problem, or facilitating or allowing. They don't have strong protections in place. And when the problems happen, it's our children that get messed up, and then we are the ones that are having to pay for the consequences. This should not be tolerated. I'm not going to tolerate that. That's why I'm standing up and speaking out about it. 5 minutes, and then we'll have 20 minutes to go. It's time. It's actually past time, but it's time. It's time now to put the interests of our children as number one. Every day we hear on the news different issues, this, that, this, that. They're now working towards putting somebody else on the moon, going to the moon again. Well, that's pretty cool. But why the hell is that above our children? Why are our children still under the carpet? No, we need to bring that out. That needs to be number one. And okay, we're going to protect our children. We're going to put the strongest protections that we know and make sure that every church, every youth-serving institution has those things in place so that our children are protected. Okay, and let's go to the moon too. But this is our priority. I've been across the street from Salt Lake, from the Salt Lake Temple the last several days, and they're going to close that down for 4 years. So that's right. A year from now, you won't be able to tour Temple Square or go to the temple there because they are doing a major makeover. I don't know how many millions that'll cost. Well, fine, that's a makeover of the temple is good. Why is that even in the news compared to our children? Our children should be number one. Let's put in the strongest policies we know of to make sure those children are protected. So what can you do? What can you do to help out with this movement? And by the way, I would hope. So here we're here at a Mormon conference, right? There's all kinds of Mormons here, whether they're members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or the member of Christ's Church. They got that right, Christ's Church, or Community of Christ. Or there's all kinds of ways to Mormon is the slogan here. This should be a wonderful cause for the Mormons. That the Mormons have stood up. By the way, do you call yourself Mormons? Consider yourself a Mormon?
Oh, yeah. We're the real Mormons.
Yeah, okay. So we've got a real Mormon. I thought the excommunicated Mormons were the real Mormons. I'm a real Mormon. Anyway, it should be a bright spot for Mormonism that right now, we're leading a movement that the rest of the country, every person I'll ever talk to, would say, yes, that's a good cause. Protect our children. We don't want to be reading about another Baptist minister that assaulted 15 kids. We don't want to read about another Mormon bishop that was arrested because he assaulted children. We don't want to read another story about a person's life who is ruined because of the shame from meeting with that bishop one-on-one and being grilled, interrogated with sexually explicit questions. No, we want to eliminate that. I would hope. I mean, this is kind of a cool thing, that this is a Mormon thing that's come out of Mormonism. And frankly, some people have asked me, Sam, why you? Why are you doing this? Well, I've kind of given you a preview of why I did for my own kids. By the way, it wasn't just one child. I've now asked all of them. Four of my kids were asked sexually explicit questions that went beyond, do you masturbate? Which that one, it makes me mad that some man asked my child that. But they even asked worse stuff. So That's the big reason I got involved with. But really, what I was trained in Mormonism, the morality that was ingrained in me, that I was raised in with Mormonism, really, I think that's at the core of why I'm standing up the way I'm standing up. I'm a product of the morality that I was taught as a Mormon. Okay, so come to the march. Yes. Now are we ready for questions, honey? Okay. Well, look, you're right on time. October 5th, 2019. And by the way, you will be hearing a lot about this in the weeks running up to it. We're planning on spending, well, I won't go into that, but you'll hear a lot about it. Do you want to come up here so everybody can hear it?
I'm Kathleen Milanakis. I'm from California. We live here some of the time, but we live in the San Diego area. So what we're fighting in California, talk about institutions that we need to oppose. What we're fighting is the radical sex ed that is trying to be put in our schools. And I'm not talking about age-appropriate 7th grade or, 6th grade even. I'm talking about kindergartners. And I don't know why these sexual revolutionaries or whoever it is get a hold of governments and institutions, but they're doing it in California. And they want to put pornography in our elementary schools and have, this radical sex ed. It's one thing to have appropriate knowledge about your body and reproduction at an age-appropriate time. But they're talking about masturbation, teaching kids to play games with sex toys, and, it's actual pornography in the hands of little kids. So, and I know that one of the institutions that's behind it is Planned Parenthood. And so teachers have told me that if they refuse to teach these things, that they'll get somebody from Planned Parenthood to come in anyway. And they will not tell the parents. And anybody that complains, they will lie to them and say, oh, no, we're not teaching that, or else you're the only person that complained. So there's a big movement in California. I don't know how it is in Utah, but the Planned Parenthood and the ACLU are trying to get this in our schools, and there's a big parental movement against it. But that's child abuse. That's taking away their innocence and getting them hooked on sex at an early age or sexualized. And they actually talk about children's the right to sex. What about parental rights to protect their children? So anyway,
thank you very much. Let me just mention something. There are a lot of organizations that are dedicated to eliminating sex abuse or passing legislation that protects, that helps victims, that protects victims, a lot of our institutions that have training, and your concerns there's institutions or there are organizations that are working to fight against what you're talking about. Now, what is going to happen, if we get enough people this march, it will raise the awareness to help any organization to point, to say, look, we're not going to stand for this. Look how many people gathered to protect our children. And so what I'm hoping is that every institution that is concerned about children, that they can point to what we've done. Okay.
And just also kind of be aware that there's political realms here, and some people are a little. So anyway, what I wanted to tell you about my story and my grandchild, when I was a young girl, I joined the church at 13, and it was in the Midwest. We were in the field, you know, the mission field, and we had very easygoing. So I don't ever remember ever having to go in front of a bishop and have to be in a room and talk with them. I have no memory of that. When my grandchild came of age and she was 12, I didn't want to go. I didn't want her to go in by herself. So I went in, and I can't even remember all the words, because sometimes when something is so horrendous, I just kind of, you know, I'm just kind of dropping the mouth and the eyes are going, you know. So I went in with my grandchild, and so they started off with the usual questions, and she's shy anyway and didn't want to be there anyway. Had I known, I wouldn't have even, you know, had her go at all. And then it started moving, you know, into these areas of sexuality and whatever. And I just, you know, kind of looked, and she looked at me, and, you know, we kind of finished it off pretty quickly. And you know, she was 12 at the time. She is no longer having any desire to go to church for other reasons as well. I do work in the primary, and I want you to know this, that in every primary class there has to be two adults. So at least that's, you know, kind of a beginning. And I think the church put out something that they put out, and they wanted to know what some general membership felt about what they thought would be appropriate, what they would feel comfortable with. You know, would it be, right now I'm not comfortable with any of it, but, you know, they had varying degrees. You know, would you feel comfortable having a bishop and a parent? Would you have feel comfortable with this or this? You know, so they're kind of, I think they know that with, you know, with additional things that are being spread about and heard about on the news, that they have to take not to be sued, and hopefully that they have the welfare of our children, that they are starting to make small moves internally.
Thank you very much. And the primary thing with two adults, that's really good. So they have made some changes. I don't know if they're going to put into, when they're going to put into place the major child protection measures they need to. And that's why we're raising our voice, because it's not just the Mormon church. There are all kinds of churches out there that don't have the proper, the state of the art, the real protections in place.
I don't know much about that California law that you were mentioning. Don't know anything about it, actually. But it just seemed like there was a lot of, I don't know. I'd want to know the resource and what exactly they're saying. I think we need to not be afraid to educate our children about sex and how to say no and how to get to know their bodies. But I don't think we need to go into the details that you were mentioning that this law is about. And I do believe in Planned Parenthood and their mission in terms of educating and making available to anyone reproductive rights, so that we are more knowledgeable about options that are out there. If we find ourselves in an awful situation, we don't know if there's abuse or rape or what's going on in terms of, you know, the trauma that a person has gone through, and they need that resource. My daughter was talking to me about wanting to get on a birth control for her acne, and the Catholic-run clinic that we go to, since she was a baby, I love the doctors there, they would not see her anymore because of that. And so the only place we could go was Planned Parenthood. And it really was sad. Even the dermatologist, it was all Catholic run. So, like, there are religious reasons why people are being controlled in ways in their health that they shouldn't be. So I do think that we need to not be afraid to teach our children. And I'm afraid that some of these laws might bring up fears in us where we think that they're going to turn our kids into sex addicts or something, which I just think that that's being fear-mongering. I really think that we need to be careful. Look at this, whatever these laws are, and fight them if, of course, they're putting our children in danger. And we all get to decide if that's the case or not. But I think the main issue for me and what I'm got up here to say is please educate our kids in how to say no and how to own their bodies and how to get to know their bodies for themselves, for their own empowerment, so that they can know when to say no when it matters. And in these bishops' interviews, if they're asked the wrong questions or questions that make them feel uncomfortable, they need to know how to say no. And I think that's your goal and your purpose in this whole march, isn't it? Just to get the word out there that we as parents and have power to change the institutional systems that put our children in a position where they cannot own their own words and thoughts and feelings, to the powers that be. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So how much longer do we have? Oh, okay. So just to be clear about what what we're about. So we have a coalition of 10 organizations. One of those is Protect LDS Children. Protect LDS Children, the thrust of our effort there is to end one-on-one interviews and end sex questions. Sex questions include asking a child, do you live the law of chastity? That is absolutely a sex question that you don't even know how the child interprets it. Is the child thinking in their head, I'm violating the law of chastity because I saw a naked woman on TV? I mean, is that violating? You don't know what it is or what their response is going to be in their heads. Are they going to say, I saw a naked woman, but I'm going to say, no, I don't, or I'm going to say, yes, I live the law of chastity, and feel like they've been lying. I know I don't live the law of chastity because they saw a naked woman. Now you've got a bishop that is going to start hammering on exactly what is going on with that child. Or if somebody's masturbating, which is most men, 95% of men masturbate. And so they are, 90% of kids masturbate, boys. And so you putting them in a situation by asking the law of chastity, no, I'm not because I'm masturbating, and they are faced with lying or not. I, based on the surveys I've done, which has been hundreds of people, you ask, did you lie? Over 50% of the hands go up. My daughter, I asked her, 12 years old. She initially didn't know what it was. When she found out, she said she was asked from then on out all the time. Did you lie? Yep, I lied, Dad, just like all the other kids. It's a very common thing, so we're making our kids lie here. So asking about the law of chastity, you don't get an honest answer. And likely putting shame on that child just by asking, do you live the law of chastity? But even worse than that, it harms the most vulnerable. So I've had people say this, that, look, how does the bishop, you want the bishop to ask sexual questions so that they can find out if somebody's being sexually abused. Oh, you are so trauma uninformed to say something like this. Kids that are being sexually abused, they have all kinds of reasons not to reveal that they're being sexually abused. So now you've put them in a position that they're going to have to be lying about it to somebody that represents God and even make them feel worse. There are stories in the book that where kids have said, it was even more traumatizing to talk to my bishop than the experience I had being sexually abused. So we're abusing the kids a second time, traumatizing the kids a second time by asking him that question. The bishop was innocent when he asked the question. He's not trauma-informed. All those things need to be so that's LDS, that's Protect LDS Children. Protect Every Child is putting in place the policies that will, strong policies to protect the child, which would include no one-on-one interviews, you don't bring up sex, you don't ask kids about sex, and then the other policies like background checks, for everybody that works with children. I would like to see reference checks with anybody that works with children. Training, good, solid training. I went through the training, and I learned so many things about sexual abuse. So the training, there should be transparency, where you walk into a church, you say, what is your policy on protecting kids? Here it is. Here's our 11-page document. Some, there's zero transparency, like the Mormon church. We don't have access to handbook number one that has how the leadership is supposed to interact. You should have, here are all the policies, and there should be accountability outside of that bishop. So if you see something going wrong in the church, you've got someplace else to go that brings accountability to that organization. Okay, so that's what we're after, is establish those really good policies. And there's several other ones that we've got on the website, but that's what Protect Every Child is for. Okay, another question? Yeah.
I think they're taking a step backwards, because didn't they just recently announce that they wanted to consider as early as 8 for these questions?
They did a survey about it, so they're asking what people think.
Right, but it hasn't gone into... No. And you kind of stole my thunder on that, because I was going to say, I think that there's a good way to take care of this, too, and that is maybe challenge them with the bishops on a regular basis with kind of a litmus test kind of thing, where they go before their leaders and, you know, ask them, do you have an issue with children? Or, you know, are you a pedophiliac? Do you have situations at home? You know, things, deep questions that would qualify them to see if they're able to maintain themselves as a bishop on a regular basis, kind of like you said, you know. You think so? Well, but but you can also tell from... But, Sam, I also wanted to ask you, too, real quick. You were a bishop at one time, too, weren't you? And what did you do how did you handle the questions when they, you know, you had the interview for missions and things like that? How did you handle the questions when you were, you know?
Well, George, you really want to put me on the spot with that? So, when I was a kid... No bishop asked me explicit questions. I'm sure I was asked, do you live the law of chastity? But yeah, I'm going to get to that. Yeah. But when I was a kid, I was never asked those questions. When I became bishop, nobody ever said, Sam, ask about masturbation. So I was kind of left at my own devices, which was my experience was, I was never asked. Now I'm not being instructed to. The thought never ever entered my mind, ooh, there's a cute 16-year-old girl here. Do you masturbate? My thought was, after I found out this is happening, why would I ever have had that thought cross my mind to ask these kids sexually explicit questions? So no, I never asked those questions. But that's why. It was my experience, and I was never given an instruction to. So then that's why I was kind of surprised to find out how common it was. Okay, and...
Weren't you kind of concerned that maybe you were sending kids out maybe unworthy? If you didn't get the pointed question out, and maybe they did have...
No, I assumed every kid was doing good things unless they came in and talked to me. Now, I was probably a crappy bishop because only one youth ever came and confessed to me. He came in and said, a 12-year-old that he masturbated, and I looked at him and said, is that... anything else you want to confess? Is that the extent of it? And he said no. And I said, well, don't worry about it. You've done what you thought you should do. Come and confess. Now you're good. Just don't worry about it. But I only had to face that once, and I wasn't grilling kids. Okay, did you have something, Bryce? Sure. Five. Well, you got a minute.
Sam, you know that I'm an avowed supporter, PLDSC. From the beginning, I was there at the march, I've made a documentary with you. You know that I am an advocate and a strong supporter of what you're doing. That's the only reason I feel comfortable asking you some possibly uncomfortable questions. Is that okay?
Uncomfortable questions?
Do you masturbate? No. is that okay?
Well, let's see what the uncomfortable
questions are.
What you are taking on is such a massive issue. There are multiple organizations that have been working for decades to put into place pieces of legislation and checks and balances that you're advocating for, and have done so with mixed success. What is the end goal for Protect LDS Children and Protect Every Child? How long do you expect that to take? And at any point, are you going to admit defeat if you're unable to accomplish those things?
Okay. Well, it's an easier question, do I masturbate? So we'll stick with that one. Okay. So there are a lot of organizations that are working in various avenues. Yet, no organization has used the tool that so many of these other causes have used to make things happen. That's what we, and the reason they used marches was for the whole country to see what's going on. For legislators, for people in institutions to see, we've got to pay attention to this. People are making a stink about it. So our purpose is to raise the awareness. And as we raise the awareness, these other organizations that are working on the legislative issues or trying to get their agendas move forward, that when they discuss this with other people, it is, they've got in the background or the foreground, by golly, this is important to our country. And all of these people agree with it anyway. Most of them agree with it. In the Mormon Church, I got a little concern about the Mormon Church, but most people, when you talk to them about child abuse, they're going to say, yes, that is a great cause. That is super. Yes, we want. And now they see this this big movement that is calling for change. And now they've got some. They've got Bryce sitting in front of them. Here are the things that I want to talk to you about. The dialogue, I'm hoping, is going to be more open. And we're going to see more things happen than we have in the past, quicker than we have in the past. Now, to admit, when might I admit failure? I haven't failed already. We haven't failed already. We've already accomplished good things. Now, for the rest of the world, we've not been speaking to the rest of the world. We've only been speaking to the Mormon Church. But parents have stepped up and said, I'm not letting my kid go in there alone. I'm telling the bishop no sexual questions. There have been numerous instances where the bishop said, no, I'm going to ask about whatever. And the parent said, fine, you will not see my child in an interview again. And there are consequences to that, but we've got parents standing up. We got bishops that are now saying, I'm not asking sex questions and I'm not going to ask, no one-on-one, period. At the top of, I think it was just yesterday, at the top of some peak, forgetting where we climbed yesterday. At the top of Grandeur Peak, one member of the party said, you know what? The stake president, my stake president, now is instructing no one-on-one interviews, period, ever. The stake president, I asked him, what stake's that? Well, it's one of the Mill Creek stakes or a Mill Creek stake. Anyway, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, have we failed? We have not failed. The children in that stake have been protected, partially. Okay, maybe the sexual questions are still in there, and that's going to shame kids. But when they've got an advocate, we've got a parent there, I can't imagine any parent sitting there and listening to the bishop say, do you masturbate? How many fingers do you use? I just want to swear when I hear the questions that have been asked. Okay, so anyway, if we quit today, we've not failed. We've saved a child. Climb a mountain and save a child. If we saved one child, we've saved a bunch. That march is going to raise enough, raise the awareness enough that it is going to protect many more children.
I love your
outlook. Okay, super. So we're out of time. Okay, we're out of time. Thanks very much for coming. See you at the march.